Well, what a night with William Henry. First, Maya prophecy says a Stargate will open in 2012. What will it be? An enlightened being or a group will emerge, perhaps? William Henry will have some answers to that key question. Who will open the door? And the light body, the name given to our extraordinary hidden spiritual body, referenced in every sacred tradition. William's got some answers there as he tries to unravel some vital knowledge for us. All that is next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here he is, author, investigative mythologist, co-host of the radio program Dreamland, William Henry, on a mission to reveal the lost codes of myth and symbols. His website, williamhenry.net. His DVDs, The Light Body Effect and Revelation 2012, The Eye of the Needle, reveal his latest findings about advanced light beings who are able to help humanity remember, reclaim our true nature, and evolve toward a divine or superhumanity. And I just was with William a few weeks ago. Hello, William. How are you?
Terrific, George. How are you?
Good, good. It's good to talk with you, but it's also good to meet you, my friend, again in person.
Absolutely. I had just a blast with that 2012 panel in Los Angeles that you moderated.
We had Danyon Brinkley, David Wilcock, Richard C. Hoagland, you, and Sean David Morton on that panel, and I enjoyed it.
Well, you know what I enjoyed the most, George, was watching you, because over the past, 5 years now, you've had a chance to interview all of us numerous times. And it was like, wait a minute, George has got our number. And I really enjoyed just kind of the way you started pressing some buttons. And I mean, you've just kind of mastered everything we've got and have an ability to kind of just put it back to us in a different way. And that's really exciting for me to watch.
It's fun. How long did you stay through Sunday, Monday?
I stayed through Sunday, yeah.
That's good. How did your specific seminars go and conference talks?
Oh, wonderful. I mean, like some of the other speakers there, the rooms were just packed to overflowing. I mean, they would put 200 people in a room that's meant to have 100 people in it.
I love it. Well, see, that's what makes a conference, William, successful. When people can, all go there to share ideas and just enjoy the speakers who are there. And Mr. Quicksilver did a great job assembling all these people this time.
Yeah, I think the LA that Conscious Life Expo is one of the very best that you get anywhere. And they run it right. And they get, like you say, just tremendous variety and interplay among their speakers.
I thoroughly enjoyed what you were talking about on your portion of the panel discussion when you talked about your views on 2012. So what we'll do tonight is basically do two things. We'll talk about 2012. We'll talk about the light body effect, both of which, of course, intertwine with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we'll go to the coasttocoastam.com website and look at some of the symbols and images that you and Dana have supplied to us as well, and we'll go through all that. We really are, William, going into some incredible times right now, aren't we?
Oh, it's almost beyond imagination, because every day there's some new report coming from major discoveries in almost every major field of science, even in philosophy. We are experiencing what I think of as a new day, a new dawn. The sun is just above the horizon. The darkness is behind us. And what is required of each of us now is to lock on to this new day, to engage it with our hearts, engage it with our minds, and watch this sun just start to rise.
The Mayan calendar, the 2012 date, you're a believer that there's something that's going to happen as we get into that time period. Are we in that window now?
I believe we are in that window now, without a doubt, George. And I really appreciated Richard Hoagland's comment that this 2012 event is sort of like a NASA launch window. It's a period of time as opposed to a specific date. But I also look at it as a door as well. And there's not a whole lot of difference really between a door and a window, but there are subtle differences. And the reason I like to focus on it as a door is because the Maya kept being insistent about the arrival of a group of enlightened beings that are emerging through a door or a gate. And so while we're talking about a window of time, the specific event that they asked us to pay most close attention to was the opening of this door or gate.
Let's talk about this gate. What did the Mayan prophecy say?
Well, it's one of the most, I think, provocative images that you can ever imagine. They describe our relationship with the center of our Milky Way galaxy, the place where our sun and solar system are aligning in this rare galactic alignment referred to as a cosmic cross. And they said that out of the center of the Milky Way galaxy, out of this alignment is going to emerge what they described as a serpent rope. And riding upon this serpent rope is either a single enlightened being or perhaps a group of enlightened beings. Now, I picked up the research of John Major Jenkins, who looked at this and said, well, wait a minute. Looks like from the imagery and the description of the event that we can take out the archaic Mayan term serpent rope and put in the modern word wormhole or stargate, and we have an accurate description of what the Maya say is going to happen in 2012. A stargate or a wormhole is going to open in 2012, and from out of that door or gate will emerge an enlightened being or a group of enlightened beings.
Does this have anything to do with the black hole that they believe is in the center of the Milky Way galaxy?
Absolutely. I mean, on a daily basis, we're learning more and more about that galactic center, and we're studying the centers of other galaxies, and all it's doing is really confirming the knowledge that the Maya claimed that they possessed over 2,000 years ago.
Well, we're getting close. It's coming up too fast, William.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's like what I say, we're in this new day now. This new sun, this new vibration that accompanies the 2012 event is rising. And it's time now to really just kind of, one, appreciate the immensity, the enormity of the transformation that is unfolding on the planet right now, and to participate in it.
And people will participate in it as we get closer and closer to this strike point. But let's talk about some more of the ancient texts, because, you know, you're an investigative mythologist. Mm-hmm. Were there other civilizations beyond the Maya that talked about this time period, or were they out there all by themselves?
Well, it depends how you look at it. I mean, the Maya are clearly the front runners in the idea of the closing of this great age, the conclusion of a 26,000-year cosmic cycle, as well as the conclusion of their own calendar, which began in 3000 BC. That's the year, approximately the year when Krishna died. It's also the founding of the first dynasty of ancient Egypt, 3000 BC. So that becomes sort of the baseline for civilization. And when I look at that date, I always go back to ancient Egypt because that's where you find the clearest record of the founding of civilization, and also incredibly evocative imagery that perfectly matches that of the Mayans. The difference is, in Egypt, this imagery seems to be in its purer form, and the Maya seem to have been mirroring or mimicking what the Egyptians had laid down before them.
Now, when you said an enlightened being or a group will emerge through this opening, this stargate, elaborate a little bit more about that.
Well, what they describe, and what every culture describes, is a group of what they think of as light beings. Every single culture has a term for these beings that match the Maya messianic figure named Nine Winds or Quetzalcoatl.
Uh-huh, okay.
A being who's part earthly, part heavenly. And when we're talking about what I mean by an enlightened being, is a figure, probably a cosmic being, who has achieved the ultimate human transformation. They have put on what is called the most sacred body, the diamond body, the super celestial body, the luminous body, the perfect body. These are beings of light who are coming into our world to bring new knowledge to us about how we ourselves become these sacred or divine beings.
Are these beings, William, dimensional, or are they from this universe? Are they angelic? What might they be?
Those are very good descriptions, because they're thought of as interdimensional beings, as hyperdimensional beings. They're thought of as thought beings. They are what we think of, at least the early Christian author Origen thought of them as angels, and thought that they were made of a supramental type substance that is closer than our physical bodies to the original substance of creation.
Are these what our guest Graham Hancock calls transfigured spirits?
That is exactly right, yes. The Egyptian term for them was the Aku.
Aku.
Which sounds like something out of Stargate
Aku.
SG-1.
How do you spell that?
A-K-H-U.
Okay.
And what A-K-H-U or Aku meant was, literally, you look it up in Budge's Egyptian Hieroglyphic Dictionary, it says, beings of light, wise instructed folk, and the light god. And as you mentioned, Graham Hancock did some early research on this, They were referred to also as the Shemsu Hor. And he said these are transfigured spirits. And that word is so incredibly important to us, because in one of the most remarkable miracles that Jesus performed, he performed something the Bible calls the transfiguration, in which he took a couple of disciples up to the top of a mountain and transfigured or metamorphosed, changed his form from a human body into a being or a body of light.
Okay, so I'm fascinated with this Egyptian interpretation of these spirits. Something must have happened. They must have seen something, witnessed something, in order to have this description.
Well, that's right. I mean, Egyptian creation mythology says, and I'm paraphrasing it here, a group of luminous beings came to Earth, founded an island civilization that was founded or centered upon a relic. There was a cataclysm. The island civilization was destroyed. These transfigured or luminous beings left, and then they came back and refounded or restarted human civilization.
That's amazing. All right, now let me put it into my terms, and you tell me how close I might be.
Okay.
Light beings, extraterrestrials coming down in craft, landing in what we now believe to be Atlantis.
That's exactly right. That is exactly the story. And in fact, National Geographic went to Egypt with me a couple of years ago to follow up on that exact same premise. And I believe that what we were looking at in that story, in that Egyptian creation myth, is the original story of Atlantis and this idea of craft. You know, I had a wonderful conversation the other day with James Gilliland about this. I'd watched his, he's got a new DVD out called Contact Has Begun, which is incredible footage of light ships, UFO craft taken from his ranch up there in Trout Lake, Washington. And I'm watching these craft, what are thought to be craft, and they're pulsing lights. And I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, you know what? That looks exactly like the way the Tibetans would portray their lamas who have turned into their light body form. They're portrayed flying around in rainbow rings or rainbow spheres. So I asked James, what do you think is the possibility that some of these craft are actually light beings? They're biological entities. And he said, absolutely, that's what he's convinced they're looking at. Some of the craft are metallic smart metal. Others are alive and biological and have performed this ascension process or light body effect and are able to jump dimensions. And when we can see them in this dimension, they look like these pulsing lights, like orbs.
When you take a piece of paper and you put a dot on one end, a dot on another, and you try to figure out, how do I get from one dot to the next? And you look at it and you go, God, that's a long way, assuming that you're looking at trillions of light years in between. But take the piece of paper, William, and fold it.
Okay.
And put the two dots together.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you're there in a flash of an eye, right?
Shortcut.
Boom, a blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way you think they traveled? When you talk about portals and openings and stargates, this is what I think about. Is that, how close am I to that?
Yeah, I think that's super close, George. And I would give a statement by William Blake, the poet and artist, to meditate on. He said, man is all imagination. The eternal body of man is imagination. That is God. And so if you imagine that you can create such a shortcut, you can.
Now, give me your image, your vision of this visitation, how it started, how they got here, what happened.
Well, again, kind of piecing this together from the Egyptian creation mythology.
And these are over years of investigations by you.
Yeah, I think what we're looking at here is a group of beings that literally just materialized in this realm, that they have the ability to travel through pure thought. They are luminous beings, light beings, who have the ability to materialize or dematerialize at will, and came into this realm and created human civilization and left within us the keys for us to transform or transfigure our own human body into bodies or beings of light.
Okay, so did they come here for a specific reason? I mean, why here?
Well, there may not be a specific why here about Earth, other than it's a habitable planet. But now we're learning that there's probably thousands of inhabitable planets out there. So the ultimate reason that the common denominator in all the religious and spiritual traditions is that they came here to spread a message of love. And that sounds kind of woo-woo, or it sounds kind of...
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's the basic message. I mean, when we're talking about the light beings, now there's no question there are other ET groups out here that don't necessarily spread that message like the light beings. They're here for more...
Nefarious reasons.
Exactly. They're an intergalactic gold mining confederation like the Anunnaki or something like that. But when we're talking about the light beings, their pure intent is to bring and establish a civilization based on love.
And this visitation occurred when?
Well, the Egyptians take it back at least 40,000 years ago, according to their god list at Abydos. But it may even be much, much further back in time. I mean, we could even be talking about millions of years ago.
And you believe the Atlantis region was their first stopping off point?
Well, according to the Egyptians, it was. And I definitely subscribe to that notion that Atlantis was kind of the original primordial Eden-type civilization on Earth.
Did they have a warning about it sinking?
They did. They were in communication, according to Plato, with Zeus, who was they were in telepathic communication with him, who was with Zeus on his throne at the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And it appears that this cataclysm, there was foreknowledge of it. They were able to evacuate this Atlantean civilization. They were able to preserve relics. Then after civilization was able to be refounded or restarted, they came back and reclaimed those relics.
Am I confusing them with the fallen angels of Genesis?
Well, there is a take that when we're talking about the Watchers, we're talking about the offspring of light beings that fell deeply into matter. So, no, I think that that's a reasonable line of questioning.
Huh. So they were all coming down here.
They're all coming down, yeah, absolutely.
I want to talk about Abydos when we come back in a moment from the break. But if you would, tell us a little bit about your work here that you've put into two DVDs in the minute or so I have.
Well, I've got the most amazing collection of the transfiguration images of Jesus where he turns into a light being in the light body effect. These images are targets for us for meditation. And when we combine the light body effect with Revelation 20:12, the information in there, it says, okay, now is the time to get busy. Now is the time to really start focusing our hearts and minds on our highest aspects.
I love it. And we've got some incredible pictures that William and his artist, Dana Augustine, have supplied. If you want to get up to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at that. We'll go through some of those tonight, William.
Oh, great.
When we come back, how do people get a hold of you? I get messages for you, and they ask me to send them to you. How do people just email you?
Well, WilliamHenry@WilliamHenry.net is the easiest way to email me.
Is your website still strong enough to take the onslaught?
Oh, absolutely. WilliamHenry.net, rock solid.
I love it. Okay, and they can pick up the DVDs right off of that?
Yes, they can. Thank you.
Very good. William Henry is a good man and investigates all kinds of ancient mythological areas. And this is just one of them. When we come back, we're going to talk about an area of Abydos in Egypt that is very fascinating. One of the areas that I continue to look at the work there, there's a tablet there. Well, I'll have William explain what that is. But, you know, this thing was like 40,000 years old or, you know, something like that. It's amazing with what is on it. I'll be back. Well, if you're interested in the After Dark newsletter where you get 13 issues for the price of 12, simply call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. We're back with William Henry. William, you were just in Egypt, weren't you?
Yes, back in January. I spent a couple of weeks in Egypt walking through the temples, just trying to connect with some of these ancient stories of the light beings.
Abydos, tell us about that incredible spot.
Absolutely. Probably the most sacred place in all of ancient Egypt, maybe even on the planet. It was a place of continuous pilgrimage for over 3,000 years. I mean, before Mecca, before Jerusalem, people went to Abydos. And it was known as the gate to the underworld. And it was here that this world met the other dimensional world, the hyperdimensional world. It was the gateway to the quantum realm, essentially.
The plate that we have seen in the past depicting what looks like a helicopter, a tank, a boat.
Right.
When do you think that was made?
Well, it was probably made around 1500 BC. Seti is the name of the king who built the temple at Abydos. And it was he, along with his son, the famous Ramses II, that were responsible for those inscriptions. It's probable, though, that what they were placing on the walls there were reflections of a much, much older technology. And the reason, the basis for saying that is that the temple at Abydos is located next to another far, far older temple called the Osirion, which is considered to be the tomb of Osiris, or the place where the head of Osiris, the Egyptian god of resurrection, was buried. The Osirion is one of the most astonishing places you can ever imagine seeing. This temple is made up of these massive, massive 250-ton red granite blocks. It looks like something right out of the Flintstones. In fact, I commented to that effect on my tour, and one of the guests on the tour said, "Yeah, why don't we just call Abydos Yabba Dabba Dose?" And by the way, I have pictures of this up on my blog at williamhenry.net. If you scroll down my blog, you'll see it. And it's still a wonder. How in the world, by what technique, were they able to first cut and polish these massive 250-ton blocks? How did they move them? And what was the ultimate purpose of this place? Well, the story is that when Seti was building his temple, he is thought to have had a visitation from the god Osiris himself and decided to locate his temple beside the Osirion. And it suggests that he actually discovered this far more ancient temple, which John Anthony West and other kind of rogue Egyptologists say is at least 12,000 years old. And when you're talking 12,000 years old, you're talking Atlantis, the realm of Atlantis once again. And it's thought that this Osirion could even be an original Atlantean temple complex.
You know, it's incredible to me that these visitations occurred during a time where civilizations were infant, basically. And then they seem to have basically left us alone, or at least that's my impression. And I'm not talking about the abductions and the sightings we see, but in terms of direct involvement, helping us, technology, showing us what's going on, maybe making the pyramids, for example, in Egypt. Mm-hmm. They seem to have just stopped that and left. Is that inaccurate?
Well, it is. I mean, a couple of things on that. First, Egyptian civilization peaked about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago. And then it's been in a state of decline ever since, essentially, where Egyptian civilization can't duplicate the feats of what they were able to perform many thousands of years ago. How do you explain that? It's backwards evolution, in other words. And the other thing is that when you're in those temples, you see clear evidence that somebody does not want us to have access to the knowledge that is here. Somebody went into these temples and started hacking away the faces, the hands, the feet, so that the gods could not perform the functions that we actually see them performing on the walls. Somebody literally destroyed these temples. I mean, I take people to a couple of places that show clear evidence of
vandalism and destruction. Huh?
Not just vandalism, but like there was some kind of attack from the skies, probably with some very high-powered energy weapon that literally just blasted these massive blocks, picked them up like Legos, and strewed them all over the desert.
All right, so let's assume that we had ancient wars of high technology from above. Mm-hmm. Can we?
Yes, absolutely, without a doubt.
They blew each other up. They destroyed each other. This was a battleground, William, wasn't it?
Without a doubt. There's been a war in heaven going on practically since the beginning, and humankind just simply became the latest swords or weapons in that battle.
See, I think the Bible's pretty accurate. I think it's up to interpretation of what it is. Putting the God factor aside for just a moment, it's a story of some very strange things that happened on this planet.
you can't believe half this. I mean, you can believe what you read in the Bible, but you're just astonished when you're reading along and you hear about beings coming and going from the stars, opening gates to the stars, this battle, these three angels or light beings showing up, materializing like they did for Abraham, or going into a fiery furnace or Stargate in Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon and returning the Son of God in tow. The Bible is, if somebody had never read the Bible and you said this is the greatest work of science fiction ever written, you could believe it.
Well, do you think the Mayans might have been the offshoot, the product, the hybrid product of these extraterrestrial visitors?
Well, that's certainly Jose Arguelles' take on this, and he did extensive research on the Maya and claimed that they were, in fact, intergalactic travelers dispatched here to bring the spiritual technology, to bring their calendar, and had total awareness of our Milky Way galaxy, how it functions in our role within the galaxy. So,
and
yes,
though
I do believe that.
We have some of them still existing on this planet, that culture and that civilization, most of them disappeared, did they not?
Well, that's what some people think. Well, I mean, there's no question that the civilization declined. What actually happened with these star beings, we don't know. But there is definite connections in cultures around the world, especially ties between the Maya and the Egyptians. I mean, you see Maya-looking figures on the walls at the Isis Temple of Philae, for example. You also see what has been identified by Stephen Mailer and his research team as a Mayan temple in the pyramid fields near Giza. So there's no question that there was interchange between these cultures.
I want to go to some of these images that you sent us, first of all, but let's explain, because we're going to talk a lot next hour about the light body effect.
Mm-hmm.
Digital artist Dan Augustine has this illustration of the light body effect. It's on the coasttocoastam.com website. What is that? What are we looking at?
What we're looking at there is the pupil in the eye. And the pupil, that's a really important word in my work, because the pupil refers, of course, to the pupil in the eye, our own black hole in our eye. It also refers to a student. And what we are all here and called upon to do is to become students of these mysteries, in effect, open our eyes to these greater mysteries. And the reason what we see here in this image is a figure, happens to be a female figure, in concentric rings in the pupil of the eye. We have the dodecahedron around the eye itself, which is the shape that scientists believe is the actual shape of our universe. And then we have all this light radiating from the eye. It's essentially an illustration of the biblical notion that if our eye is single, we're full of light. And also this idea of Jesus' statement on the impossible, that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of the needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. The message here is that to stop focusing on the materialism and the accumulation of wealth, and rather to focus on the accumulation of spiritual knowledge that will ultimately transform us into these light beings so that we can then go through the eye of the needle.
William, you've been pounding away at this for a lot of years now. Are you getting to the point where you think you're close to putting the pieces of the puzzle together to see the big picture?
Well, I feel like I'm getting a yes. To answer your question, yes. And getting back to Abydos, the key image in all of my work is a device I refer to as the Stargate device. I mean, we talked about the tank, the helicopter, and the boat at Abydos.
Right.
But there is another image that is probably of Atlantean origin that really tells me that the entire mystery, or lays out the entire mystery that we're to comprehend. It's a device that portrays the king Seti, who built the temple at Abydos, and his transformation into a light being. Today we would call this instrument a Stargate device, or a hyperdimensional device of some kind. It's clearly an Atlantean technology, and it is also a resurrection technology. And what it shows us is the ultimate image of the tree of life from the Garden of Eden. Remember, these are the secrets that we've ultimately been denied, the wisdom of the tree of life and the tree of knowledge, because it was that wisdom and knowledge that we acquired at one time that prompted the Israelite God to close the gate to heaven, And what we're always attempting to do is to reclaim the secrets of that gate to God and reopen the gate to heaven.
Willis from Switzerland sends me a fast pass. He wanted to ask you if you knew of an underground city under Abydos. Now, I'm not aware of that.
Well, I mean, the thing is, George, almost all of those Egyptian temples are simply markers for what goes on underground. And by the way, I'm taking another tour back to Abydos and to Egypt in April, and I've got a few seats available if you'd like to join us, because that is such a big part of this research, is to understand that while these temples are magnificent, they're simply this is like going to Area 51 and seeing the hangar, the entranceway, okay? Everything is underground in Egypt. Even Dr. Hawass admits that when you're on the Giza Plateau and the pyramid fields around Giza, we've only discovered about 20-30% of what we believe is actually there. Everything else is still underneath the sand.
You know, I want to be able to witness the Hall of Records at the base of the Sphinx.
Well, come on one of my tours, because the gateway to that Hall of Records is between the paws of the Sphinx. I mean, everybody talks about the right paw of the Sphinx and all the casing material as regards that, but nobody talks about the red granite altar in between the paws of the Sphinx. But that red granite altar was placed there to alter your consciousness, to put you in tune with whatever knowledge is beneath that Hall of Records. And that is the starting place. And I can take you there, and you can put your head on that red granite stone, you can meditate on it, and you can allow the vibrations of that place to begin to seep into your consciousness and let it start to tune you to the true secrets of the Hall of Records.
Now let's talk about the light body effect then. If this is pure energy, is there evil associated with this, or is that come off something else?
You know, I've never seen evil associated with the light body effect. And as I mentioned earlier, every tradition has a name for this light body. It's referred to in the Bible as putting on the whole armor of God. It's called the most sacred body, and pay attention to the names because they're very instructive. It's called the supra-celestial body, the diamond body, the divine body, the perfect body. And, I mean, that's one of the important words there, the perfect body, because these in the Bible, these beings are referred to as the perfected ones. And what that does, that term does, is it links us to the Tibetan tradition they called the great perfection, when the Lama would spin the energy of his body, accelerate the vibration of his body, and spin it into a vortex of light that they call the rainbow body or body of light, which would enable them to essentially, George, open wormholes and travel throughout the cosmos.
The Shroud of Turin, with this burst, assuming it's authentic, this burst of energy that created the image, is that like this light body you're talking about?
Absolutely. I mean, experts are in agreement that image on that shroud, whenever it was formed, is not made up of any physical substance such as paint or pigment. It's, in fact, they believe, an alteration of the linen itself by some effect of light or radiation. And what they think is that it was a laser-like light that may have lasted only a few milliseconds, a short burst of radiant light that went through that shroud, and it was likely the only surviving relic that we know of a human being transforming into the light body.
It was dramatic, fast, and very strong.
Yes. I mean, like, incredibly strong. And yet, what it is, it's the ultimate manifestation of the heart energy in our body and the ultimate use of our imagination. That is essentially the way the Tibetans and even the Christian tradition talks about how we achieve the light body effect. How do you do it? I mean, getting back to Jesus' statement on the impossible with the rich man, he says, how am I going to get to the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus tells him, follow the commandments, not the Ten Commandments, the two commandments. Love with all your heart, all your mind, and all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Well, this light body bursts, was that a form of teleportation?
it is a form of teleportation, using the ultimate love energy and imagination energy of the universe. And so where that figure went, that is really the next question. Maybe he beamed himself to the center of the Milky Way galaxy. Could be he went to Sirius or the Pleiades. You can make cases for all of those locations.
But it was teleportation.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, we're talking about a figure who is beaming himself around the universe. And now here's the thing, George. Back at Abydos, you have this story of the King Seti who built that temple. But what you also have is the story of King Seti who also transformed himself into a being of light. He didn't leave a shroud. He left a depiction of a technology that he used to turn himself into light so that he could then toggle between the dimensions. And there's an incredible story that's told by a woman named Dorothy Eady, who later took the name Om Seti, about how she had interactions with King Seti, even in modern times.
In a reincarnation form or what?
Yes. Well, no. She reincarnated in Victorian England. The story was that right. She was a temple priestess of Seti in 1500 BC. She was a vowed priestess of Isis who had an illicit affair with the king, became pregnant, committed suicide rather than suffer the disgrace. And Seti was brokenhearted. And after he achieves the light body effect, he searches for her throughout time until he finds that she's reincarnated in England in 1904. And in her story, Dorothy Eady tells how Seti, who was a light being, could materialize in this realm and toggle between the dimensions.
That's amazing stuff.
Oh, right? it's phenomenal. But what's so exciting about it is that he left us a depiction of how he did it. He left us the depiction of this device that it looks like some kind of, looks like the Ark of the Covenant with a pillar or antenna attached to it on one wall. And then on the opposite wall is the same device, but now he shows a wormhole-shaped ship attached to it. And the message that I read from this, and by the way, Dr. Brooks Agnew was on part of my tour back in January.
He hasn't taken his journey yet through the center, has he?
No, he hasn't. He's still looking for that center, but he's been just really enamored by my research on the OSIRIS device and came away absolutely convinced that what we're looking at is an ancient wormhole device or Stargate device on the walls at Abydos.
Now, where's the device? Did they take it away?
Well, here's the thing, George. This is where this gets really interesting. When you're talking about the word device, I call it the OSIRIS device. The ancient Egyptians didn't call it that. They called it OSIRIS, or they called it the bond between heaven and earth, the ladder or stairway to heaven. I put the word device on it because the word device refers to a technology.
Okay, and it makes it sound like an object.
A tool, but most importantly, the word device refers to a symbol. And when you're in these Egyptian temples, George, and you're looking at these symbols, the whole thing is like a magical technology. You are to mimic what you see the gods doing on the walls, and you will be doing what they're doing.
William, in May of this year, they're going to fire up the particle accelerator, CERN, in Switzerland. I want to get your take on that when we come back.